Hello and welcome to Race Matters, a conversation of substance about one of our nation's most uncomfortable topics. I'm Marilyn Bell, art director at World Literature Today magazine. As singer, songwriter, and activist Nina Simone once said, an artist's duty is to reflect the times. Our guest today, hip-hop artist and activist Jasiri X, takes Simone's imperative very seriously. It's even part of his artist statement.
Watch that black girl rock, that black girl rock. Man, the whole world won't put that black girl got. Fizz, she the best, look at that black girl walk. Daughter under the sun, that mean that black girl hot. Watch that black girl rock, that black girl rock. Man, the whole world won't put that black girl got. Fizz, she the best, look at that black girl walk. Daughter under the sun, that mean that black girl hot. Watch that black
beautiful
girl
beautiful struggle,
rock.
You glide right through the trouble. You ride right through the rubble, so fly.
Jasiri is an outspoken proponent of politically and socially conscious hip-hop, who works with organizations such as the Urban League and the Gathering for Justice to highlight the issues that affect his home in Pittsburgh and communities nationwide. By fusing together his passions, music, and social justice causes, he hopes to lead a new generation in changing hip-hop's bad rep, or as he puts it, he's freeing minds one rhyme at a time. Jasiri X, welcome to Raise Matters.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's an honor to be on the show.
Well, let's get started by talking a little bit about your upbringing in Pittsburgh. Can you tell us about growing up there and how the city has changed since you were a kid?
Well, more so, I guess my upbringing started in Chicago, Illinois. So my experience with Pittsburgh was really very, very different because I was coming from, you know, an experience on the south side of Chicago where my school was 100% black. And so, you know, I was in a neighborhood in Chicago that because of, you know, the type of neighborhood it was and the violence that was happening, my mother wanted to move me and my sister to. So we actually moved to a suburb of Pittsburgh called Monroeville. And so I literally went from an environment that was like 100% black to 95% white. And it was like the first time I really experienced like in-your-face racism. And kind of realize like, oh, this is what my mother was talking about, you know, when she was talking about Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and, you know, all of these people. And after I realized that I couldn't, you know, fight everybody and get suspended, that's kind of what made me become an activist, you know, being in this school. And so we started like a black club and we, you know, got to school to start a black history class. And this is kind of one of the reasons I talk about race a lot in my music, because I experienced like the pain of like dealing with, you know, racism like in my face firsthand. So that was like the Pittsburgh that I experienced first was like, this is a very racist place. You need to, like, if you want to see it better, like, you have to be actively involved in doing something about it. Yeah, I think that, you know, right now, you know, Pittsburgh is really going through this kind of like economic revival, but, you know, the sad part is it's really, you know, only affecting like one community. You know, Pittsburgh was called America's most livable city by Forbes magazine a few years ago, in the same year that it was called the most livable city in America, according to the United States Census. We had the poorest inner city black community in the country. Poor in Detroit, poor in Cleveland. And so we began to ask the question, well, who is it most livable for? And so a lot of the, you know, economic development and revival that's happening in Pittsburgh, unfortunately, is not, you know, trickling down to, you know, the poor, predominantly black community in Pittsburgh.
What ways could people in Pittsburgh work to make that happen for everyone so that not only is it livable for whites, but also for blacks and other minorities as well?
Well, I mean, I think this is one of the reasons why we started the organization One Hood in Pittsburgh, because what we saw, you know, and we started this 10 years ago in 2006, when Pennsylvania actually led the nation in what they call, quote unquote, black on black crime. I don't like to use that term because, you know, I feel like it's a politically loaded term and people commit crime where they live. But when it came to community violence, we led the country. And so we began to use hip hop as a way to kind of bring our communities together to increase the peace in the streets. A couple of years later, the Heinz Endowment, the Pew Center, actually did a study about how the media in Pittsburgh portrays black men. What they found was 90% of the time it's crime. If you add sports, it's almost 100% crime in sports. And when it came to quarterly of life stories about black men, it was less than 2%. And so we began, this is when we started the One Hood Media Academy and began teaching, you know, young people of color how to analyze media, create media for ourselves and tell our own stories. And so to me, I think it's really beginning to look at, you know, Pittsburgh, the city as a whole, and not like, you know, different communities or different places. I mean, you know, what we're experiencing right now in Pittsburgh is like, before you make any changes or improvements, the first thing you do is like move out the majority of black people, you know what I'm saying? Then it's like a Whole Foods and a Trader Joe's and, you know what I'm saying? As if like we don't like, you know, good food, you know, nice restaurants and nice things, or like we can't handle those things, you know, in a predominantly black community. So to me, I think it's like when you come in and you want to develop a community, you want to make these changes, really looking at the city as a whole and not just like it benefiting a select few.
So when did you first start as a hip hop artist yourself?
Really right around that same time. Actually a couple years after that, my best friend at the time when I was around 16 got some turntables for Christmas. And he basically said, okay, I'm gonna be the DJ, you be the rapper. And so I wrote a rap, it was terrible. But you know, along the way, like people just encouraged me to keep writing, and you know, I kind of, you know, found my voice. And you know, hip hop for me was special in terms of like when I went to this environment, this predominantly white environment, I feel like hip hop, the music was able to help me keep my, you know, myself, you know what I'm saying? And not try to be something other than what I really was, you know what I'm saying? Hip hop really helped me to find my own identity. And so when I started writing music, I always wanted it to be something that had some type of meaning and not just me writing raps to write raps.
Hearing what you've talked to us about already, it seems apparent to me that because you moved to Pittsburgh at a pivotal time in your youth, that you're trying to sort of address these issues with children at a much younger age. And I wonder how you feel like you may have been affected had an organization like One Hood Media existed when you were a kid in Pittsburgh.
Probably not. I mean, and you know, I think that, you know, like I said, for me, hip hop helped me to keep my identity. And so it gave me a sense of power, like gave me a voice. Like I can, you know, rap, I can say, you know, what's on my mind. I can get on the microphone and like you at that point have to listen to me, and I can tell you like how I feel. And so, you know, hip-hop music and writing music was very therapeutic for me and helpful to me. And so to give other young people that opportunity to say, you know what, your voice matters, your story matters, whether it's you writing, blogging, whether it's you creating videos, whether it's you're doing music or production, like, you know, your creativity and what you do matters, you know what I'm saying? And so for me, it was also, I think, too, you know, I grew up in a single-parent household, and so I struggled early in my life because I didn't really have a male role model that I could interact with. And so I think another part of it was also trying to provide mentorship to younger men that might not have, you know, a male role model in their lives that they can kind of interact with.
Well, let's talk about your work specifically, because I've been listening to a lot of your tracks online. And I'm especially curious about your song, The Babies.
They ain't tell us we be murdered by the policia. Ooh, child, they said things were gonna get easier. They ain't tell us we be crucified in the media. Turned into a hashtag, highlights on Wikipedia. The rich get greedier, the poor more needier. The hood seedier, lock us up instead of freeing us. Who speaks for us? We ain't listening when you preach to us. So concerned when we can only learn what you teaching us. If love is the lap dance and hip hop is rap bands, our babies, they don't stand a fat chance. Damn.
It was inspired by a conversation with the organization called the Perception Institute. And they were working on this project where they were talking about, you know, wanting to change the perception of black men by the year 2020. And initially I was going to kind of write an essay, but, you know, I was kind of like, well, can I do a song? And so that's kind of how I stepped into it. And I read an article in the New York Times that talked about the 1.5 million missing black men. And I thought that was really deep, you know what I'm saying? And then I started to think, like, what effect does that have on our children growing up? What effect does, like, our children seeing, like, Ayanna Jones gets shot down by the police at 7 years old, or Tamir Rice gets shot down by the police, you know, at 13, have on like their classmates and their peers and like, you know what I'm saying? And them not getting any justice in this case. Like as our babies are watching, you know, this violence that's happening around them, what effect does it have on them? And do they have outlets in order to like express how they feel? And that's kind of how I began to step into that song, to really ask the question, like, you know, are we considering like how all of these things have an effect on our children and our babies, you know? And I think it's really interesting how, you know, we have these schools a lot of times that have these zero tolerance policies when it comes to violence, but yet, you know, we seem to only want to solve our problems through violence in America. And so I just felt like it was it's very hypocritical. You know, to tell a child, like, you know, that is, you know, there's zero tolerance, and if you do any type of violence, you know, we're going to remove you from this society, but then, okay, go join the army, or, you know, if we feel any type of threat as a country, we're bombing, you know what I'm saying, and it's like police come on the scene in a very violent way, you know what I mean, and so, you know, oftentimes, you know, the movies and, you know, people that we look up to are very violent characters. So I just was also kind of calling out the hypocrisy that I see in American society, particularly when it comes to children.
Jasiri, to me, this song speaks to a lot of different systemic racial problems. You're talking about income disparity, about policing and mass incarceration, about misrepresentation in the media. So I wonder if you can tell us which one of these problems you feel is the most pressing.
Wow, I think that's, you know, that's hard. I mean, and, you know, all of them are very pressing. I think we focus at One Hood Media around media representation because, you know, I feel like it's conditions people to see black people in a certain way. I mean, the only time you see us, if you don't live around any black people, you might not know black people, but the only time you see us on the TV or in the newspaper, on the radio, is criminals and thugs. And then it's like, when you see me, you might clutch your purse. You know, you might become scared because you've been conditioned to see me in only one way or only through one lens. I think this is where, you know, the media narratives become so dangerous. You know, so, you know, you see a black man in a hoodie and automatically it's like, oh, he must be doing some type of crime. Young black men dress in a certain way as criminals. Like, that's the only lens that I see them through. So I think that that's why it's important for us to have the ability and the power to tell our own stories and change those media narratives, because I feel like it really can condition somebody to see, as, you know, black people, brown people, anybody that's classified as the other, you know, you're seen through that lens that you become conditioned in.
Do you have any specific ways in which you recommend to people that they work to change those narratives?
I mean, I think the first thing is diversifying, you know, the media. You know, I do a workshop called America's Most Wanted, Hip Hop, the Media, Mass Incarceration. And I start off with the CEOs of the major hip labels that distribute hip hop. And they're all white men. And I asked the crowd, I said, well, what are the similarities, the CEO of Universal Music Group and Warner Atlantic and Sony, what do they have in common? They're all old white men. Then when you go to, you know, whether it's GE or whether it's Viacom, you know, where all of these media producers, at the top is old white men. And so you get basically a very stereotypical representation. I think, to me, that's why social media has become so important, because it's given a voice to people that we have never had the mic. You know, so it's like now you can get on social media and you can create your own. It's like we can respond to what's happening right now. Like, I can turn my phone and record a rant and put it on Facebook and YouTube, and millions of people can begin to share it and watch it. And I can begin to provide that alternative narrative. So, I mean, in the media lens, where the media is becoming increasingly, where it used to be all these different media companies, now it's only a few. And they have control of that mainstream narrative. And primarily, when you look at who's making the decisions, it's white men that's making the decisions. Then, of course, people are getting stereotyped. So either diversify that news, or, you know, we'll begin to create our own media. And I think that's what you see people are doing. whether it's One Hood Media or other organizations that are doing it, or people that are going on social media. I mean, look at, you know, you had a young woman named April who goes on to Twitter and begins to talk about the lack of diversity in the Oscars and creates a hashtag called OscarsSoWhite that becomes so popular that the Oscars actually begin to make changes. That they actually had to address the lack of diversity at the Oscars because of what somebody on Twitter began to do. These are the avenues I believe we can take to get our own story out. And that's what we try to teach our young people at One Hood Media.
This is Race Matters. I'm Marilyn Bell. If you're just joining us, I'm talking with hip-hop artist and activist Jasiri X. Jasiri, who is your target audience?
I think as an artist, like, oftentimes, you know, I'm trying to speak to, you know, young people of color, you know what I'm saying, and just oppressed people, you know, that's kind of normally who I'm talking to, people, you know, that are activists or organizing to try to change the world and make the world a better place. You know, there's some people who are intent to try to see, you know, America in through one lens or want to take America back, you know, to a certain time. You know, where America was supposedly great, but of course, in that time, it wasn't great for people of color, it wasn't great for women, it wasn't great for other groups, you know what I'm saying? And so my target audience oftentimes is people who are trying to, you know, improve the world and make the world a better, a more equitable place, a better place where all of us can prosper.
Do you see your music as a means of catharsis for people or a call to action for systemic and social change, or both?
I would say both. I think that, you know, it's definitely cathartic for me because I know a lot of times I'm angry at what I see happening. When I see, you know, a young person of color unjustly killed by the police, I'm angry. And for me, like, writing a song or telling that story helps me, like, get it out, you know, without doing something that would be destructive to my own self. And so hopefully, you know, in people sharing that or listening to it, it can be cathartic. But I also, like, oftentimes I write in a way where I want to make you think. I want to create discussion. I want to make you, like, listen to this story and feel like I got to do something about it. I got to change this. So I'll say things that are provocative in an attempt to get you to, you know, move to really act and do something to improve the conditions in which we now live.
Once you take people to that place, what kind of action steps can they take so that they become a part of the movement and join that fight for social justice and change with you?
Well, I mean, I think sometimes on some level it's simple. I know when when I did the song for Trayvon, we had a petition in the video that was, it was a collaboration with myself and an organization, Color of Change. And so it was like, okay, once you watch this video, you can click this petition. And at that time, the call was for George Zimmerman to be arrested. I've always encouraged people, like, to get involved with, you know, in two ways. One, I always ask people, like, what are you passionate about? Because I feel like if your activism comes through your passion, then it will be natural and it'll be something that you want to do. It won't be like forced, you know what I'm saying? So if your passion is media, then your activism should come from that. If your passion is music, your activism should come through that. You know, if it's visual art, or if it's, you know, if it's accounting or being a lawyer, I feel like your activism should come through that. And I think also people should become active where they live. And sometimes things will happen. You know, I've been to Ferguson. I went to Baltimore. I went to these different places when they became like the epicenter for activism and a fight for justice at that time. But I live in Pittsburgh. And so I have to do something where I live. You know what I'm saying? I mean, and I'm blessed to travel to travel all over the country to do what I love to do. But I come back to a city that has the poorest black community in the country. So I feel like I have a responsibility where I live to begin to do something to develop or inspire or give people the opportunities that I find myself having. And so those are the two things that I would encourage people to do, like activism in the community that you live in.
In Pittsburgh, in your community, I know you talked about One Hood Media and the work that you're doing with the youth. What other specific things can you tell us about that you're working on now in your city?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Well, I'm scoring a movie called Body and Soul, which came out in 1925 and was Paul Robeson's first film. And so I'm actually I wrote 10 original songs that are like the soundtrack to this Paul Robeson 1925 silent film. And so it's, you know, definitely like a unique like mashup between like, you know, old and new music. And so that's the next piece that I'm working on in Pittsburgh. I'm also worked with an organization called Be Me in Pittsburgh, which basically they gave fellowships to specifically black men in the community doing grassroots efforts. And so we have that happening. We have our One Hood Day celebration, which is coming up. We did it last year where we went to a park and just kind of set up a stage and music in the park, and we, you know, fed the community, and we had like a, you know, a socially conscious hip hop show, because we stay busy.
I know that you were recently in Chicago to receive an honorary doctorate from the Chicago Theological Seminary, and I wonder if you could briefly tell us about that experience, because, you know, you are a native born son of Chicago.
I wasn't expecting anybody to give me a doctorate, let alone like the Chicago Theological Seminary. But at the same time, like, they're a very progressive organization. You know, my interaction with the Chicago Theological Seminary, you know, I performed at one of their conferences. And when I was there, it was right when, you know, Baltimore was exploding over the death of Freddie Gray. And so I'm like in a chapel, and I kind of said, like, I wasn't going to censor myself because of the environment that I was in, because I felt like because of what was happening right now that I needed to, you know, say these lyrics how I wrote them. And I needed to express the pain and anger and the hurt that was very real that was happening at that time. And, you know, in doing so and kind of having a conversation about that and why I wrote this music, they really connected with me in a very real way. And so, you know, the pastors and the work that, you know, when I went to St. Louis and got arrested, it was with, you know, several pastors and rabbis and imams that had came together, you know, to protest what was happening in St. Louis and in Ferguson. And many of those, you know, are kind of connected to the Chicago Theological Seminary. And so, you know, I'm definitely honored by it. I was a little bit nervous to do the commencement speech because I didn't want to mess up anybody's graduation. but it went well. And I mean, it's definitely an honor. But for me, I feel like, you know, anytime I get something like that, I feel like I have to now work harder. I have to like earn, you know, it's like, okay, you're given this honorary doctorate, now I have to earn it. You know, I mean, if I'm getting a doctorate from a place where Dr. Martin Luther King studied, and then now I have a responsibility to kind of live up to, you know, this title that I was given.
Jasiri, I want to thank you again for being with us today and sharing your work and your words with our audience.
I appreciate you having me. And, you know, I thank you for, you know, having a discussion about race and why race matters. And I always feel like if we can have, like, that's the first step, having honest and real discussions around race, not ignoring it, but dealing with it straight on. And I think at that point, that's how we begin to become, you know, more unified as a country, as a community, as a world.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Tell us about musicians and artists who connect with you and your racial identity. We're on Facebook and Twitter at Race Matters Show. Race Matters is produced by KGOU in partnership with World Literature Today magazine, your passport to great reading. Views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the staff or management of KGOU or World Literature Today. Our producer is Paige Willett-Lowe, and I'm your host, Marilyn Bell. Thanks for listening.